On Life Matters, I'm Cassie McCullough. Now, if you're a single woman in your 30s, I'm told, the chances are that sooner or later someone will pop the question. Not a marriage proposal, but a question that's likely to come in a form like this. Are you happy being single? Why aren't you married? Do you think you'll stay living alone forever? And although many women are staying single, a lot actually, in fact, it's still an awkward place to be, according to Dr. Lauren Rose-Warne. She says that the world is made of coupledom. She's a lecturer at the University of Melbourne and an author of half a dozen books on pop culture, sexuality, gender, the internet. And she's written an essay that's about to be published in the latest edition of Meanjin magazine. It's called Choose Your Own Misadventure, Single Ladyhood in 2016. Lauren Rose-Warne, good morning.
Good morning, Cassie.
I've got already in my head Beyonce's song, All the Single Ladies. There's so much pop cultural representation of singledom around at the moment. Is it having a moment?
It really feels like it is a moment. I can't, go onto my social media feed without getting advice that I'm not a loser, which I think I didn't realise it was even a consideration before I saw these headlines, somehow feeling a need to reassure me I'm not as bad as I thought I was. And I think there's a bit of an industry at the moment, which is interesting because the data has actually been this way about sort of 40% of adult women being single. It's been that way for over a decade, but yet there seems to be an industry, particularly centred around women's magazines, reassuring me that I'm okay.
Mm, and also kind of promoting the idea of the carefree single life as one that's totally aspirational, that it's almost like a lingering memory of the Sex in the City trope.
Except my concerns with it is that it's almost about trying to reassure women and sell them on something, as opposed to just this being life for people. Just as some people are married and some are single, there seems to be a really conscientious effort to try and reassure you that this is okay with, photos of women jumping on a beach, akin to the old tampon advertising. And I'm just not sure, it's almost that doth protest too much line that is there really something that women are actually severely anxious about and thus need to be reassured, or is this an invented problem?
Well, you've turned to these questions on yourself, and in this essay you actually compare yourself to your mother at the same age, your age, which is 36. Yep. What do you see in that comparison?
Yeah, and I tell a story of coming back from Phillip Island with my best friend, and I looked at him and I said to him that, I'm 36 in this car. The last time I was in Phillip Island was with my mum. I was 10 years old, she was 36. She had two kids, a dog, a career, a house. I have none of that. But I don't really look at this as seeing it as some sort of failure. I see it more as a set of different choices. And I think that idea that this is somehow I've ended up this way, as opposed to circumstances sort of leading me to this path, I'm not sure it's necessarily 100% choice, but nonetheless, this is my destination, which does look quite different to my mum's.
Yes, and you say besides not having the dog and the plants and the kids and the car and the husband, etc., you kind of paint a portrait of yourself as a little bit kind of clumsy. You say I've dropped my iPad on my face while reading and split my
lip. Not even just once. But I tell my mum, my mum doesn't actually give me a hard time about the babies thing because, I'm the one who's actually more jokingly self-deprecating. When I turned 35, I said to her, the government brings around the truckload of cats now, and that's the policy now. I have to look after them. She didn't think it was particularly funny, but, she's not. My grandmother used to do it a bit, but I haven't had that experience that women talk about or that TV caricatures of single women being hassled by relatives. I've not experienced. Perhaps it's because my personality dictates they're going to get a very facetious response.
But what you have experienced is some kind of, being put in a pen, really. Just tell us about the wedding that you describe in your essay.
Yeah, I tell a story of being invited to a wedding and being seated on the lesbian table as though, okay, well, where do you quite fit? And I think this is an interesting thing that single women of all ages report. I have one grandmother who's 85, and she talks about how she's been single now for 20 years. If there are coupled events, it's very likely that she won't be invited to join. There's this perception that a single woman, be it odd numbers at the dinner party or perhaps that she's going to be construed as somehow sexually predatory, whatever it is, single women tend not to be included in coupled activity. So at that wedding that I described, I was seated with the lesbians because the assumption was I don't quite fit with the couples talking about whatever the hell couples talk about, Jimbaroo, kids, whatever comes out of children, diseases, etc. That I wasn't, I didn't fit that, so I had to be, you know, vanished.
I'm sure it's very hard to arrange seating at a wedding. I do have a little bit of sympathy for it. There is always a table of interlopers, isn't there? Some sort of people who don't quite fit into family, friends or whatever it is. But tell us, I mean, you're quite revealing in this essay about how you feel quite, well, in two minds, because you say it's never been easier. There's all these dating apps that mean, you know, you're really... can argue that people are single by choice because they can see so many possibilities. And that's an argument that's thrown at single people. Why don't you jump on you know, the dating apps? And also when you walk down the supermarket aisle, there's all these products that are uniquely designed for a single life. And yet you say you feel a little bit like an egg that's part Humpty Dumpty, part Fabergé.
I think I guess it's hard for me to shake off the shackles of being an academic. So my essay is really about the two minds that I'm in about this single status, because there is good and there's bad. And I've never related to all of these books, for example, that talk about the wonderful life of single women. And, you know, there's a deluge of these books. But also I don't relate to these, you know, very depressing essays written by women saying, you know, no one knows how sad it is to be alone crying at midnight. And I don't relate to either. I think there's positive and negatives, but I think that's the case if I spoke to any married woman. She would also say there is two sets of realities here. There is a great comfort perhaps being married, but there's also some really, you know, loss of liberties, etc. So I think there's two narratives going on. And I guess that for me, it's a reminder that single women is just a marital status. It's no more revealing about an individual than any other single quality, yet it becomes such a demographic definer.
Do you think that the nature of marriage is being questioned as we have this same-sex marriage discussion going on across the country?
That's a tricky one because, again, you know, we've already, if you look at the data, we've reached that point where we've had peak divorce, if you like, or peak women not choosing to divorce. Things have settled down now. So the marriage rates we've got at the moment have been consistent for about a decade. So there's not a sudden sharp rise in people choosing not to. That's already sort of documented in data that's a decade old. I think there is a questioning, certainly, you know, celebrities have done this where they've questioned, I'm not going to get married until there's marriage equality. I'm not sure I've seen this in any data or even anecdotally, truth be told, that people are really affected by that. That said, there's plenty of data to show that people are choosing to cohabitate with their partner rather than marry, or if they do marry, they're going to postpone it into their 30s now, which was not the situation for my mother or her mother.
We're talking on Life Matters with Dr. Lauren Rosewarne. She's written a piece for Meanjin magazine that's about to be published very shortly about, well, she says, single ladyhood in 2016. And as you've already pointed out, Lauren, the ABS statistics suggest that 40% of women between 25 and 65 are single. Now, that suggests also that there's the same amount of men who are in that situation. What's the difference?
Well, I think that's very revealing in itself, that this isn't the single man syndrome. I've not seen any books about this. I've not seen any articles teaching a man how not to look like a tragic spectacle sitting on his own in a restaurant. It seems that there's, and this is, you know, an enduring stereotype, that for a man to be single, that's a chosen lifestyle. For a woman to be single, she's been left on the shelf, she's a spinster. And I think there's partly a truth there in the sense that older men, and and it doesn't actually matter what age we're plucking out, an older man has an easier time to couple because there's a cultural expectation that women will go out with someone older than themselves, men will date someone younger. So it makes it more difficult for older women, or as women get older, to find an appropriate an appropriate male partner. This is when the demographers call the man drought, because there gets to a point where women are almost, if you like, pricing themselves out of the market.
Mm-hmm. You do have a description of women that I did I did have a little chuckle at, and that is the, I think it's the black-clad professional widows, the bitter divorcees, or the tawdry Tinderellas. Is that your word, Tinderella?
No, there's actually a book I came across when I was doing some work on online dating that used this term, Confessions of a Tinderella. It was the title of the book, and I quite liked it. I thought it was a nice title.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. Well, Lauren, thanks for talking with us this morning, and thanks for opening up this part of the discussion.
Many thanks, Cassie. Cheers.
That's Dr. Lauren Rosewarne. You can catch her article, Choose Your Own Misadventure, Single Ladyhood in 2016, in the upcoming or the current edition of Meanjin magazine. I'm Cassie McCullough. This is Life Matters. Coming up, we're going, yes, into the imaginary world of children.